This is where they are building the largest nuclear fusion reactor in the world.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me I had to check out this pool.
America on Main Street and at the dinner table is talking about infrastructure when 20 years ago, they didn't even know what that meant.
Today, those towers are an astounding display of wealth, prestige, and engineering firsts.
It's impacting everyday Americans.
I am against the train. The way it's being done right now.
New York City housing is a scam. It is a scam, 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 scam.
The Shard in central London is being officially opened today, and at 310 metres tall, it's Europe's newest and tallest skyscraper.
Hello, I'm Fred Mills.
And this is the world's best construction podcast
by the B1M.
Hello, 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 and welcome to your latest episode of the world's best construction podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Trimble Construction. I'm your host, Fred, and as always, I'm joined by Luke and Liam. Let's come to Luke first this week. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, not bad whatsoever, mate. Starting to spring a little bit here, which is nice. And I had a pretty chill weekend. I was on old YouTube on Saturday on the sofa, and I watched, believe it or not, Fred, a Poundbury vlog. A dude who just went for a walk around Poundbury. Wow. You know what Poundbury is, don't you, mate? Yeah. Wild weekend, mate. Wild.
For those of you listening who don't know what Poundbury is, should you just explain what Poundbury is? For those of you listening who don't know what Poundbury is, this is a custom-built town in the UK, down in the West Country, I believe, of the UK. Dorset, there you go. And it was custom-built by the then Prince Charles, now the King. It's an interesting place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's technically a new town. And I think it looks a little bit like Disney World. Like, it looks a little bit fake. It doesn't look quite right. But it looks a hell of a lot better than some of the absolute dross that's thrown up around the UK, like on new build estates.
Was there nothing better on YouTube this weekend?
There was one or two B1M vids, but other than that, mate, it's been a quiet week. Bit of football. Just been a sofa weekend, mate.
This is absolutely riveting, fellas.
Yeah. Cheers. Do you have a good weekend?
Sorry, that's some random town in England. Mate, I had a really good weekend. I actually flew into New Zealand for one of my good friend's weddings. I've got to say, this fits well with the video on Sydney's metro system. New Zealand, Auckland, New Zealand has the worst, and I mean the worst traffic I've ever seen in my entire life. Is the motorways are just like backed up like all day. It seemed like that. I was there for 4 days and it was taking me, usually a trip would take 25 minutes from the airport to my dad's house, an hour and a half. And then I'd have to go from there an hour north and it took 3 hours. And this is just us. I hired a Tesla and I was a bit, I wasn't the smartest on battery charging. I was like, yeah, that'll last. You got 20%. That'll last. I get stuck in traffic for 3 hours. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, what happens if I run out of battery with a Tesla? Does some dude come around with like a battery pack and just pump me up like on the side of the road? What do? You just get towed.
Brilliant choice of words there as well, mate. I've only ever been a passenger in a Tesla, but did you enjoy it?
Like, other mate, than I loved it. What I compare it to is the day that I switched from an Android phone to an iPhone, and everything with the iPhone just worked smoothly. It was just really efficient. Oh. It's hard to describe. It's just really nice. And I love all the gadgets on the big screen. You know, literally you can do anything. I love how the aircon's set up. I love, like, when you're accelerating, obviously it just goes so fast. And then you just take your foot off the accelerator. You just, obviously the power stops. So you hardly use the brake.
Yeah.
Big fan. I don't know if I'd recommend it if you're on holiday doing a lot of driving. Probably wouldn't do that because you have to, you know, find like charging stations and things like that. There's not that many in New Zealand. But for home life, got a charger at home, I would get one. It's on the list.
There's a quote for the traffic police in Auckland. If you want to go and investigate that one, Liam hardly used the brake.
You can go very fast in them too. It's very hard to go the speed limit as well, mate.
Ooh. Yeah.
Coming up today, we're talking about Sydney's $64 billion mega railway, a very, very cool project down in Sydney, Australia. Also in the news, we're going to be covering London's $8.5 billion Earls Court regeneration and the enormous Phase 2 of Hudson Yards in New York. Whole thing, as ever, is going to be sprinkled with some of your messages and comments from the past week. Let's go. First of this week, we are talking about Sydney's $64 billion mega railway. And I have to say, before we get into this, I just want to say how much I absolutely love projects like this. It is a massive feat of engineering, huge piece of infrastructure. It's sustainable mass transit. It's going to change people's lives. It's awesome. I love it when we cover stuff like this, right? So, as you might have guessed, this is an enormous new project being built underneath Sydney, Australia. Bit of history and context for you. Sydney is a city pretty divided by its harbour, right? It's got a beautiful harbour, makes for great postcards, great pictures, but that's a bit of an urban planner's nightmare. The north and south of the city are cut off from each other by the harbour, and really the history of Sydney's infrastructure has been the history of trying to bridge that gap. They did that most famously with the Sydney Harbour Bridge in 1932, which I believe is the largest steel arch bridge in the world, we say in the video. But then it took up until 1992 to build the second crossing, the Sydney Harbour Tunnel, which is a dual carriageway that goes under the harbour for about nearly a kilometre, connecting North Sydney to the CBD. They're also, as you guys will remember, building the Western Harbour Tunnel now, out, funnily enough, in the west of the harbour. But now there's this massive new connection taking place. This is part of the Sydney Metro, a $64 billion mega project to better connect Sydney and its suburbs. Are you excited for this one, Liam? This is your neck of the woods, mate.
I am actually, mate. I'm actually very excited for it. It's pretty cool as well, because when I'm watching the video, I'm like, oh yeah, that's what's going on in that part of Sydney. Like, oh, the CBD. Oh, I've been wondering what's behind all that scaffolding on the boarding and things like that. So, yeah, mate. I didn't know, we mentioned this in the video, it's the world's largest railway construction
project. It's the largest suburban rail project, yeah.
Suburban, yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's not still equally impressive title when you get into the specifics. What's that thing in America? Like, oh, it's the third largest dam west of the Mississippi River or something. People are like, oh, good story. Yeah, anyway, I just have to say, like, I know we're going to get into detail on the construction, but this project is immense. It's going to make such a difference to so many people's lives. And for me, it's the best of construction, because the construction works are largely happening out of sight, out of mind. But when it happens, it's going to make a huge difference to the economy, to the country, to people's livelihoods, and you'll take it for granted. So yeah, it's an epic, epic project. Mm. As you might have guessed, with a $64 billion mega project like this being built in an existing city, there's quite a lot going on. And some of the numbers here, right, are just insane. So we're going to take you through it. It's being built in four phases, right? The whole Sydney Metro system is split across four phases. Phase one is already complete and open. That is Sydney Metro Northwest, which became operational back in 2019. That alone cost $7.3 billion Australian dollars, right? 36 kilometres of track between Chatswood and Rouse Hill, 15 kilometres of tunnels, 4 kilometres of bridges, 8 new stations. That alone is an epic infrastructure project, isn't it?
It's huge. I mean, that 36 kilometres of track. Is this expanding the city at all? Like the city limits? Is this making it easier for people to get into the city centre? Are they like having to redraw any of the city boundaries?
It's connecting the suburbs. So this is the story of many major cities around the world we've talked about before, where...
Why laughing? Why are you laughing?
It's obviously designed to connect the community and bring the suburbs to be able to connect to the city, mate.
You know what I mean.
Well, in fairness...
Ignore the middle bit.
They could have called it the Sydney Suburb Link, couldn't they? It's the sort of thing that, you know, New Zealand would have done.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's the story of many cities around the world right now where the centre of the city has become very expensive. So people are living out and about, out in the suburbs, they live further outside from the city centre. However, a lot of the metro system and transit systems are designed to get you from outside the city into the centre of the city rather than between neighbourhoods in the city. So what this is doing is relieving congestion on the roads by connecting many of the suburbs around Sydney and providing a direct link through into the CBD from the suburbs. So if you look at this, there's a map we do in the video. It's basically like a giant ring. I mean, a very, very big ring. Part of that ring passes through the CBD and goes over the harbour, connects up the other side of the harbour. Another bit spins round past the new Western Sydney Airport and then back round again to the north of the harbour. So it's, yeah, it's basically bringing the suburbs in touch with the city. And it is helping the further expansion of Sydney, because now you can live further out but still work and commute into the middle. Does that make sense?
Right. That's what the District Line did, you know, back, you know, 100 plus years ago. So just saying, yeah, putting that out there. But this
there's
is
a
impressive
boomerang joke in here somewhere, because you can basically go, you sort of go around a circle and come back to where you started again. But anyway, I'm not going to make that joke because it would be stereotyping our Australian friends. Right, that's phase one. That's phase one. There's three phases left. Phase two is Sydney Metro West. That is 24 kilometres of underground metro rail connecting Parramatta to Sydney CBD. That was $25 billion Australian due to be completed in 2030. Again, massive project on its own. Now, I want to ask Liam something, because we say in the video that Parramatta's being like teed up as the next centre of Sydney. Any chance of that, mate? Is this like what they comparison to London? Is this like saying Lewisham's the new West End?
Oh,
Lewisham.
Oh, mate. I'd have to tread carefully here because you'd upset everyone in West Sydney. Yeah, pretty much. Like,
I think you've answered it. You to be honest, that. You've answered it. Okay, moving on. Sorry if you live in Parramatta, yeah. But we send you our love. Phase three includes the connection to the new Western Sydney Airport, and that is $11 billion. So this is a huge, huge project. Now, the new international airport is going to open in 2026. That is expected to service more than 10 million passengers a year, easing the burden on Sydney's main airports, which accommodates one of the busiest passenger air routes in the world. I'm well familiar with that route after my journeys there last year. Again, this is a really important part of the link, because linking that new airport with a direct rail connection right through to the CBD and other parts of Sydney is critical to basically making that airport viable. So huge step there. Phase four is the most exciting phase, and that's the phase we tend to focus on in this video. This is the really cool bit that burrows underneath the harbour and under the CBD area. Now, Sydney Metro City and Southwest is the name of this section. It's got two main components. The first is converting 11 stations on part of the existing Bankstown line for use by autonomous driverless trains, which I think is your neck of the woods, Liam. I think it comes through, looking at the map, it comes through sort of Newtown area, your region-ish.
I think it'll be going through Marrickville, which is the closest new metro for us in this route.
There you go. Exciting times. Again, passing pretty close to the main existing Sydney airport at the moment, Kingsford Smith, which is, again, a really good connection. The second part of phase four is a new 15.5 kilometre twin tunnel, 40 metres underneath Sydney Harbour, and then on through the CBD. That is being carved out from sandstone. It is the largest rail line to be constructed under Sydney since the City Circle Underground Railway was built in the 1950s. Huge piece of work. So, I mean, altogether, guys, I know we've had a bit of a laugh and a joke going through this, but between phases one, two, and three, you've basically got four immense infrastructure projects there that all together are creating an enormous new sustainable mass transit system in what is one of Australia's fastest growing cities. So this is awesome. I'd say, like, obviously, we're, you know, 10,000 miles away, Luke and myself. You're on the ground, Liam. Do you see this making a big difference?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I think it should ease a lot of congestion with traffic. I was saying, obviously, Auckland's really bad at traffic. Sydney is really bad. Obviously, the roads are designed a bit better and the infrastructure, the public transport is far better than what it is in Auckland. But I think you might have mentioned before, I think you're saying Sydney's expected to grow by 60%?
Yeah, population? It's, I can't remember what the year is, but it's really growing and expanding. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Like 2050, that's maybe, or something like that. So I think, wow. I think this would be great. I think a lot of people use it as well, because those suburbs right now, you don't have fast trains or reliable trains coming regularly, yeah, kind of thing. Right. So I think it's great. I also think the new airport's a really good thing as well. Obviously, Western Sydney, there's a lot of people out there, and if it's going to have 10 million passengers, obviously there's a huge demand out there for it. I think it'd be great. We keep getting people writing about if we're going to do a video on that as well.
Yeah. I want to. Ooh, weren't a fan, so we'll see. Maybe we'll make it inside.
I love that.
Liam's eye, you don't want to cover that.
I think honestly, it'd be obviously Sydney's like an international city, and it's an amazing city. But I think this will just everyone will benefit.
No, absolutely. And I think it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. But you don't really realize the impacts that you think it's just a new metro line that's dug underneath the city. And obviously, it's very cool engineering. We talk about the engineering in the video, but just like think about what this does for taking cars off the roads, which makes cleaner air, less pollution. Think what it does for the housing market. You're no longer trying to buy a property and spend a fortune to live close to the city, close to your job or your workplace. You can buy a bit further out and commute in. It does loads for the economy because those businesses in the center of town have a bigger labor pool. They've got more people within a commutable distance. So they've got a bigger pool of talent and labor to draw from. It does so much for the city, so much for the community, so much for people's well-being. Projects like this are just awesome. Love it.
It'd be interesting to see what the rail prices were. I was I watched a video the other day on a journalist in England, and he was going around asking people, I think in London or somewhere, what they would think for a monthly ticket price somewhere out of London into London, like an hour commute, what the monthly price would be, and then what the same distance would be in Germany. And the London one was £450 and the German one was €49 a month. So obviously England's, way ahead. And I don't think Sydney would be that expensive, but it'd be interesting to see what kind of prices.
Yeah.
I'm always interested to see I like comparing rail prices around the world. I find it really interesting.
I think like London, when you're in London, the TfL prices to travel around London isn't so bad. Traveling in and out of London, especially traveling like cross country in the UK to get a train from London to Manchester or London to Edinburgh is horrifically expensive. Mate. It is actually cheaper to fly, which, in this whole world of trying to shift people away from aviation, not just away from aviation, but towards more sustainable forms of travel, we're not helping ourselves, are we?
No, not at all, mate. Not at all. That winds me up. I'm trying to look at train tickets to Manchester every now and then for football. And I always just think, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. And the system doesn't work. But talking about money, Liam, you must be pretty happy that you bought in Sydney. Once these underground stations are working, you're going to be thinking, oi, oi, little bit of investment money coming in, asset rich.
Damn it. I don't know. You can't really lose on the Sydney housing price.
Sydney housing market, can you, man? It's gone up again. 60% increase of population, though. That's wild.
I think it swings and roundabouts because, the property prices are all right. The weather's nice. But then also, there's loads of spiders. And if you go for a swim, you might get eaten by a shark. So.
Yeah, that's true. So
yeah, maybe I was thinking as well with the congestion and things like that. If you're going to build all these networks, obviously, I think personally, I still think there's a generational thing here with people getting trains and things like that. I know in Europe, it's like ingrained into you from when you're young, you get the train everywhere because it's just easier, right?
Yeah.
And I do think people will take this if they have the opportunity to take a train to work as opposed to spending ages in traffic and things like that. But what I was thinking is, If the city's growing at such a fast rate, congestion is still going to be there. There's going to be obviously people using public transport, but there's still going to be cars on the road. So it's kind of just going to keep growing and growing, isn't it?
No, I was going to say there has to be this sort of continued investment in sustainable mass transit. And obviously they've designed and built this system with capacity, with foresight within it. But you're right, it is going to be an ongoing problem. And I think it's going to be interesting over the next few years, with fuel prices, car tax, car tolls, all that sort of stuff. It becomes quicker and easier to commute by a metro train system where you can get some work done. You can, do whatever you want to do on the way to work. It's more productive time. It's more enjoyable time. You're not stuck in traffic. You haven't got the cost or expense of it, provided the train tickets are, sort of a sustainable level. So it's almost like there needs to be that, yeah, like you say, Liam, that sort of cultural shift in how people approach trains and transit. I think in Europe it's pretty standard that you can hop on a train and go somewhere, or you, in a major city you hop on a metro and go somewhere. It's like that a bit in New York, like the subway system is there, but not many people, I don't know, it almost seems like a second tier form of transit, the subway system in New York. And then you go to many other US cities and there just isn't a metro system, you know, outside of Chicago, LA. Yeah. Shocking.
Yeah. I'm surprised you've not mentioned, Fred, TBMs. Talk to us about some big boy TBMs being used.
Well,
in this,
as you might have guessed, given that this is a large construction project under a city, a new metro system, we've got some TBMs, guys. Lots of cool engineering in here. I want to talk first about Australia's largest underground railway, largest underground railway cavern, which was constructed at Victoria Cross Station. This is an enormous new space that's been carved out. The excavated railway cavern is 265 metres long, 25 metres wide and 20 metres high. Now, that is like Sydney's recently completed Salesforce Tower lying on its side in this space, right? It's enormous. If you don't get that reference, if you're not from Sydney, Australia, San Francisco's Transamerica Pyramid could also fit in there. I mean, this is an enormous great room where they're building this new station. 31 metres down beneath the streets of Sydney. It's currently taking shape. They're putting in escalators and mezzanine and the platforms that future commuters are going to use. You can see this in the video. It's a huge space. To have dug that deep under an existing city where you've got infrastructure, foundations, all kind of loads to take into account is really, really impressive. 2019, the tunnel boring machines broke into that cavern and connected the station onto the new train network. And as I said, it's now being fitted out. So, yeah, impressive stuff. 16 TBMs in total are being used on this metro expansion. Once it's fully completed, they'll have used 16 altogether. Largely due to different ground types, they sort of had, you know, to use different machines for different areas, different horses for different courses. But yeah, I mean, you've got I know obviously we're chatting about this on the podcast medium. We've talked a lot about what it will do for the city, what it means, where the route is, some of the prices. But go and have a look at this video, guys, because the scale of the engineering in this is just insane.
What happens to the TBM or the fleet of TBMs in this case? Like 16, that's a lot. And these are big boys, well, really big boys. What happens to them once the project's done? Are they sold elsewhere?
That's a good question. Or? So in the old days, I say this going back a few decades, there was a culture of when you finished your tunnel, you would just drive your TBM into the ground somewhere and bury it and just be abandoned. I think they did that with the Channel Tunnel or a couple of other tunnels somewhere. It was just abandoned.
No, they did.
They drive it down a route.
No, you're winding
it up.
Me up. They've recently
they've started breaking them up, dismantling them, and sending them elsewhere again. So they are pretty custom made machines. So you do have to have the right horse for the right course, because depending on whether you're building a rail tunnel or a cycle tunnel or how many lanes you've got or what ground you're going through, you have to have the right diameter and cutting head. But the components can be dismantled and reassembled to create new TBMs elsewhere.
Oh, well, that's better than just sinking one into the English Channel. That's crazy. Is that true?
I need to look it up. I need to look up some examples for you. But I believe the Channel Tunnel was one. But there was definitely a culture where TBMs would just be driven off and buried in the ground because it was easier than trying to get them out again.
Brilliant. Okay. All right.
Where you drive a TBM forward and then if you stop the TBM, like this was during COVID, I think this happened to one of them, and you leave it for a bit, the ground can settle around it and basically pinch the TBM into place. So your TBM can become stuck in your tunnel. It's why they need to continuously keep moving, or at least, you know, moving on a pretty regular basis. So I think, I can't remember which project it was, but I think it might be one of the New York rail upgrades we did, but it got left for like 3 months during COVID. The ground settled, the TBM got stuck, and they had all manner of problems to get it dismantled and rebuilt again. Yeah.
Blimey, that's rough, isn't it? That is rough. Well, if anyone wants to buy a TBM in a bit, Sydney.
Yep, 16 coming free. They'll be over on eBay. Guys, let us know what you thought about this. It's an enormous project. The video is well worth checking out. Epic feat of construction deep underneath Sydney, Australia. Get your comments coming in. Let us know what you think of the project. Podcast@theb1m.com. So today's episode is sponsored by Trimble Construction. Viewpoint Field View is Trimble's site management solution that's helping construction companies of all sizes to improve quality management, deliver defect-free projects, and comply with the latest building regulations. With Field View, you can easily manage defects with visibility at every step, maintain quality and compliance across the supply chain through predefined workflows, and track project performance from anywhere. Guys, the likes of Bellway Homes, Waits, Galliford Try, and many more are already going paperless on site with Field View. So why not give it a try? These are massive organizations, massive contractors running paperless sites right now. Give it a go. Get stuck in. Find out more at the link down there in the podcast description. We're going to put it right down there for you in the podcast description. Go and check it out. Worth pointing out a really cool case study recently. Middlesex Limited, which is a construction company in the UK, are now becoming a paperless company. They're going green by using Field View. Recently used it on the Abraham Cowley unit at St. Peter's Hospital. Really impressive new mental health unit they're building down there. Again, with a paperless workflow, better management of your drawings, better control, easier on-site project management, much easier collaboration. Guys, go and check it out down there at the link in the podcast description. And a massive thanks to Trimble Construction for sponsoring today's episode. Also in the news, we are heading back over to London, UK, where the £8.5 billion redevelopment of Earl's Court has been announced. Well, more details have been announced of Phase 1. This is set to kick off in 2026. They've released, as I said, more detailed renders of the first phase of the master plan. Huge, huge project going on here. Phase 1 is going to start in 2 years' time, 2026, as I said. It's going to include the construction of 1,000 homes, the first office building in the development, a cultural venue, and new green space. These renders have gone down very well on social media lately. People really liking the redevelopment plans for this famous and kind of deserted site over the last few years. So it's exciting to see this getting new life. For those of you that don't know, this project's going to rise on London's largest cleared development site. It is a triangular piece of land where the Earl's Court Exhibition Centre once stood. That was opened way back in 1937. One of the UK's flagship entertainment venues. It hosted the Brit Awards, the Olympic Games, automotive, military and boat shows, and many, many gigs and concerts. It was sadly demolished in 2013, but now it's getting a new lease of life. So I like this project. Obviously, it's a London new development. There's going to be high-end shops and high-end flats, but it's nice to see something becoming of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a nice little mixed-use area, right? Like you said, shops, flats. It looks very London. It's got that NLV, that new London vernacular. Brick. Yeah. Go on.
The what? Drop an acronym up in here.
What?
The what?
NLV. NLV. You never heard of NLV, mate?
No, mate. I'm pretty sure you just made it up.
No, mate. Type in new London vernacular. It's got some Wikipedia the NLV page, from mate. The DLR. That's how you know it's legit. Yeah, you nice. Can. You can, big time. Around the Docklands. Massive, mate. Massive. Love a bit of the DLR. This is a great development, mate. Is it perfect? No. You know, could it be more affordable for some people in places? Probably. I'm sure there's some social housing, affordable housing in there, you know, somewhere. A little sliver of it. But, yeah, big fan. Looks good. Looks decent.
There is a target, I should say, just to quote the Earl's Court Development Company, sorry to cut across you, that says that 35% of properties across all tenures are going to be earmarked as affordable. Obviously, that is the London Mayor's definition of affordable, which I believe is 80% of market rent.
Oh, that's quite impressive, though. 35%.
Yeah, I think this looks great. I really like the Art Deco look. I think the green space looks awesome. Not too over the top. Bit of shrubbery in there, you know. It's 2024, why not?
Yeah. We love it, don't we? It'll last a few years, so that's nice.
We do love it, mate.
love how Luke called it a nice little mixed-use scheme. Just a casual $8.5 billion they've put together. They've put together and invested. Spent years thinking it out. And yeah, Luke's comment was nice little mixed-use scheme. lots of nice comments in this one, guys. People saying for 11 years, this was just a blank space. It's nice to see something being put in there. Love the symmetry. A few people commenting on luxury housing and the fact the area might become a bit more gentrified. But that, yeah, obviously we've talked about that at length before on this podcast when it comes to new developments. I think it's good to see something happening with the site. They're saying that the 35% affordable housing is a target. It is a target written on their website page. So I don't know. I've been around the block a bit with affordable housing targets in London. They always get cut back. But let's see. Good team on this. So let's see where it goes and how it ends up. From one massive multi-billion dollar development to another, we are swinging across the Atlantic to New York City, where they have finally unveiled some renders for phase two of Hudson Yards. This is an absolute beast of a development. Now, Hudson Yards, you might remember, is on the east side of Manhattan Island. They built a load of skyscrapers by constructing a platform over a live rail yard, putting foundations and piles down through the rail tracks. Very, very clever system. On top of there now, you've got enormous skyscrapers like 30 Hudson Yards with the Edge. You've got the Vessel by Thomas Heatherwick. You've got the Spiral by Bjark Ingels. Now, the long-planned Western Yard, which is basically doing the same thing again, but over the west of the rail yards, has been unveiled. We haven't put it in the posts or on our social media, but the rumours kicking around is that this is about $12 billion. Now, that's a lot of money, but I'm not sure it's going to be that in New York. I think it could be a bit more, to be quite honest.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I this is impressive to see. Unfortunately, it's been led by an enormous casino development. So Wynn Resorts and related companies have released renders of the new hotel and casino complex that they're going to construct in phase two. At the core of that is an 80-story tapering super tall skyscraper, Very nice looking building, I have to say. There's lots of greenery around the base. You might remember if you've been to New York or if you live in Manhattan, you'll know that the High Line kind of stops at Hudson Yards, but you can see the rest of it connecting right around the Western Yards. It's a bit of a dead end at the minute. The idea is to make that live and bring it into the High Line proper and connect that part of the High Line into the western part of Hudson Yards. What we have got in these renders is a very nice skyscraper sort of straddling the High Line. So you've got this sort of like High Line tunnel going through it, which is very impressive. Huge thing. There's going to be a 5.6 acre new park. There's going to be office space, apartments, a 750 place new school. Really, really massive thing this is. This is literally making New York bigger again. Shame it's being led by a huge casino, but hey.
Can't have it all. So, yeah. Is it me or does that building on the tapered buildings, that looks more Asian than, you know, like New York, right?
It does. It looks a lot like the iconic tower in Egypt.
Yeah. I don't know.
Super tall.
I don't know if I'm a fan, mate. I don't know. Looks a bit generic, a little bit copy and paste. But I suppose that suits Hudson Yards a little bit. I hate to say it. I don't know, mate.
Yeah, it is a bit. When I went to Hudson Yards, it just feels a bit soulless. They are trying really hard. They're doing lots of like pop-ups and culture and little cafes and things. But I don't know, the shops were all incredibly high end. I mean, way out of my bracket. And it just felt, especially compared to the immediate neighborhood around it, it just felt very cold and soulless. So it'll be good to see it fully completed, fully built out. I hope that helps make a difference. But yeah, no, let's wait and see. A few comments on this one. So Dino saying, how many people bought apartments in phase one without realizing their views were going to be inevitably blocked? Yeah, that is going to be a right pain. One chap saying sublime. Someone else saying absolutely love it. People saying amazing design. Arthur Kaspler, a great loyal fan from Australia, saying absolutely insane, especially considering all this is built on a rail yard. Absolutely.
That's true.
Huge feat of engineering.
That's true. That is true.
So yeah, I think there's inevitably going to be criticism and questions of this, but I guess it's good to see what is currently a derelict site being built on.
Yeah, true.
I say derelict site. It's actually a live rail yard, but the high line going around it is a bit sort of derelict at the minute. So, yeah, good to see it being properly built out. And it'll be good to see the full vision of Hudson Yards come into life. So, yeah, I like it. Guys, let us know what you think about the new Earl's Court development and the massive new Hudson Yards expansion. Get your comments coming in, podcast@theb1m.com. Bring it over to the inbox. What you got for us, Luke?
Got an email from Graham Embley. He asks, "Hi guys, still loving the podcast after a six-month binge of us." That is, I don't know whether to feel sorry for the guy. Poor Graham. He said he's just got eight to go and then he's going to binge the rest. Now he's got questions specifically for Fred. He goes, "Fred, I know you like a nice timber construction. Have you seen the new build in Old Paradise Street next to the track as you're coming into Waterloo? Hard to see properly when I come into work because it's just getting light, but it seems it's mostly timber. And it really looks quite sexy. Not anywhere near the scale you're used to, but it rocks my boat. Keep up the great work, fellas. Graham Embley, age 62 and 7/12. Well, I thought that was quite funny. And he's from your neck.
Very nice.
He's from Surrey. He's a Surrey boy. What are you saying, Fred?
He probably listens to the podcast because he likes all that sort of early 2000s Top Gear banter that we were credited for the other week. He's probably right up his street.
Apparently so, mate. Apparently so.
I haven't seen that project. Probably because I've, when I'm on the train to Waterloo, I'm often head down on my laptop working away, you know, or just in a daze. But I will have a proper look at it and check it out. It sounds interesting. Because that is Surrey to Waterloo is a train journey I do often.
I think it's like a green building. It's a green building. The frame is timber. I'm just Googling it now. So Old Paradise Street timber building. If you Google that, you can see it. I wasn't aware of this, and it is kind of like, you know, smaller scale, like what Graham said. But yeah, looks decent enough. Kind of looks like what we're knocking down though in a lot of London from, yeah, you know, like the 60s. But if it's timber, then it's trendy, isn't it? And it's good for the environment.
So, I know where it is. It's sort of as you come, it's sort of between Vauxhall and Waterloo. Yeah. I'll have a look now.
There you go, mate. Oh,
good shout. Hey, look, it's not about the size. If it's interesting and there's a good story, we'll definitely share it on B1M.
There you go. See, we could get some content out of it. Hang on. Cheers, Graham.
Asterisk, yeah. Unless it's your kitchen or your shed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or your local library.
Yeah. Always. But there we go. That's nice. There we go. Yeah. I'm also shouting out someone who... I haven't got their name because it came up with like an AI generated like username because I don't think they want their name shared, but it's from Spotify and they said, "May we please have a B1M special pod detailing Luke's trip from Essex to Heathrow, how the train was, the hotel, any accidents on the M25 that morning, security and queue experience, please. Cheers." So I'm going to do that.
I'm well up for that. We need to get to the bottom of what was cheaper. I want like a proper Excel spreadsheet, mate, of how much you spent
cheaper
on each journey.
/ more convenient. There we go. Done. I'm going to do that. I'm not joking.
One of our stronger podcast opening segments, guys, it has to be said. Obviously, often that chat at the beginning of the podcast can be a bit dry some weeks, but... the chat about how Luke was getting from Essex to Heathrow was a
riveting,
that was a belter.
Yeah.
I think we'll do another quiz soon as well. I haven't quite got over the pronunciation quiz. I couldn't breathe for laughter listening to that back. But yeah. I think around Easter, maybe we'll drop another quiz.
Yeah, all right. I've got a few ideas, mate. Let's do it. Let's have it.
Guys, get your comments coming in. Get your reviews coming in. I'm not just saying it. You actually need to go and click the 5-star review button. Leave us an Apple review. Send us your messages, you know, engage with the podcast. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. We've enjoyed talking to you this week. Massive thanks to Trimble Construction for sponsoring today's episode. Don't forget, guys, you can find out more about Viewpoint Field View down there at the link in the podcast description. Stay tuned, get your reviews coming in. We'll see you next week.
Maybe you did something to the lines when you were digging up that sewer the other day.